Make way for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast that always wears galoshes when it rains. Here he is, podcasting for the good of all mankind. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello, everybody. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. This is the only podcast in the whole wide world of podcasting that talks about Medicare incessantly from the start to the finish. Medicare, Medicare, Medicare. Aren't you happy to be here? Well, actually, I would normally say, no, save me from Medicare. But in our case, we try to make Medicare a little more entertaining, a little less heavy and ponderous, and perhaps a little more useful than other Medicare podcasts that I have heard. Frankly, there's a lot of dreck out there having to do with Medicare. And when you come to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, we're going to try to make sure that you don't have to suffer the dreck that other Medicare podcasters put out. I will tell you that our information is largely inspired by the book that I write every year, which is entitled Medicare for the Lazy Man, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. You can get that book at Amazon or Barnes and Noble. If you go to Amazon, you're going to find the paperback version, the Kindle version, or the Audible version that you can listen to. You can listen to this voice put you to sleep. But anyway, you can buy any of those or all of those at Amazon.com. You can buy the paperback version at barnesandnoble.com with that has brightly colored illustrations in it, or you can basically just listen to this podcast, and someday eventually we will have done enough episodes so that you'll know everything there is to know about Medicare. The unfortunate thing is that Medicare things change. Some things change from one year to the next. So you're going to have to keep listening probably the rest of your life if you want to be as knowledgeable as possible about Medicare. So what do? We often share our time with Randy Carson, who is pushing the buttons and spinning the knobs and sliding the slides over on the other side of the screen. Good afternoon, Randy.
Doug, how are you? You're looking particularly collegiate today with that sweater. Well,
I could say the same about you. And my sweater is reluctantly worn because the temperature here has dropped like a rock. I'm in Illinois. I'm told I can't live in Arizona in the summertime. So we come to Illinois, and what happens? The temperature eventually turns cold. And that's what just happened the last couple of days. On the other hand, you're wearing a sweatshirt because you're acclimated to Arizona, and it's probably you got the air conditioning turned up a little too.
Yeah,
too
the air conditioning is on 72, so I need a sweater. Now, one might ask, well, if you need a sweater and you keep your air conditioning at 72, why don't you just turn the air conditioning up a little bit and not wear a sweater? Well, here's the reason. I've got so much computer gear related to my company networking in here that I need to have the computer gear cold. So I don't really care whether I'm cold or not, but the computers do.
If I see you wearing mittens, then I'm going to know that you might have made a mistake in your thermometer setting. But that makes perfect sense. Now, tell me a story from the olden days of computing when, like maybe back when you were with the bank, would there be a room full of processors with vacuum tubes generating all kinds of heat that had to be removed through the roof of the building? Am I just dreaming about that? Or
they wouldn't be vacuum tubes, but I'll tell you, kind of a story. The bank building that I'll refer to in this story was approximately a city square block, maybe not quite as large as that, but it was a good sized hunk of ground that the bank building sat on. And the entire eighth floor was taken up by computer gear. It had raised flooring, if you know what that is, in a computer room. It had raised flooring entirely across the computer room.
And it had room for the cables. The cables.
Yes, make room for the cables, as well as every so often there was a panel that had holes in it to let air up through the floor. And in the case of Omaha, most of the big buildings downtown got their air conditioning, wherewithal from OPPD, which ran a great big chiller. It's kind of like, I think Chicago was kind of like that too, wasn't they? Didn't they run a chiller, or was that heat?
I think that was heat.
Okay.
But I know that they had a system of tunnels under which coal was delivered. So I think, actually, I guess it couldn't have been heat because they're delivering coal through these stupid tunnels, which eventually flooded. And the coal went to the basements of all the big buildings in the 1800s, the early 1900s. So I don't know that they had a chiller system either. I just don't know.
Well, back in Omaha, we got all of our chilled water from OPPD, and that's what we cooled. Well, actually, the entire building was chilled water we was circulated to us from OPPD. They used to circulate chilled water to all the skyscrapers down in downtown Omaha, rather than have to have, great big units on the top of the buildings.
And I have seen, when I've been on Chicago skyscrapers, I have seen great big units on tops of the old buildings. So I believe those are remnants of their own building specific cooling systems.
Right. And the great part of that was, if you lived now I'm slipping back into my software guy terms. If you lived on the eighth floor where the computer gear was, you never went wanting for cool air, because they kept it at about 66 degrees in there. You had to wear either you were a tough person or you had to wear a hoodie. Otherwise, by the end of the day, you were just so freaking cold, you couldn't stand it. And then when you went out into the Nebraska 95 degree heat, you would literally melt on the way to your vehicle.
Oh, boy, that reminds me, when a friend came to visit me in Arizona in 06, in June of 06, and he and I were doing stuff with classic cars, but we took a day off and we went to the Pima Air and Space Museum down in Tucson. And the Pima Air and Space Museum has a bunch of new buildings that they have built over the last couple of years. But it didn't occur to me that they were really green buildings, and that they were not, they were cool inside, and everybody that was in those buildings looked comfortable. But it was probably 115 degrees on the day we were there, and we walked across, the buildings are not contiguous, so they're a long way away. And so we walked from one building to another, and as we walked into the building that we were going to visit, which I think had an SR-71 Blackbird in it and some other interesting stuff, we were greeted at the door by an old dude who was going to help orient us to what was in the building and tell us where to go to see the stuff we wanted to see. But both my friend and I looked at each other and we thought, holy crap, I'm having a heart attack. And it was because when we walked into that building, we didn't think about the cool air having just left the 115 degrees. We both were instantly wet. We had broken out into a complete sweat. I looked at him like, should I tell him I'm about to have a heart attack and I'm going to keel over? He had the same thought. We stood there listening to that old guy talk to us and not hearing a word he said, because we were both inwardly checking our vital signs, because we both thought we were about to die. And it was just this instant sweat. And it's because those buildings were cooled by swamp coolers, evaporative, not air conditioning. Had it been regular air conditioning, we would have just felt fine, maybe a little chilly. Oh, boy, after 115 degrees, this sure feels good. But when you walk into a building that's cooled with a swamp cooler, the humidity is about 90%, even though it's very cool. And we burst out into a sweat like you wouldn't believe, and thought it was all over. So
kind
of what using chilled water kind of reminds me of. For some reason, when I lived in Tucson in the 70s, almost every place, not where I live, but almost every place that I saw had swamp coolers or swamp boxes. And then they'd have specials on the television every either spring or fall, probably in the spring, telling you how to get up on your roof and get the equipment all disassembled and what paint to use to paint it, because these things would rust like you wouldn't believe, and how to put new filters in, and how to balance the airflow in your house, because you don't do it the same way you would with forced air heat or air conditioning. You have to, every room, you have to hold the door 6 inches open and it should close itself when it's properly balanced. It's just a bunch of garbage to go through. You know, air conditioning is such a big improvement. Anyway,
oh my
enough
God.
About Tucson.
That's a good story. So let's move on. I think we need to talk some Medicare. Yeah, I think so. Let's do so.
Why don't we dip into the mailbox, the MLM mailbox. If you want to send us email that's going to be read to the listening audience, then the address to use is dbj@mlmmailbag.com. So I have a couple that live on the West Coast, and their names are Sandy and Art. And Sandy and Art, actually, Sandy's doing all the thinking. Art's just along for the ride, I think. But he's the guy who has the job with the employer group medical insurance. And he is going to retire at some point, probably around the first of the year. They haven't picked a date yet. So I've been talking. Sandy got an early start on this research, this Medicare research. She listens to a podcast that I advertise on, and she called me, and we've gotten to be friends. She sends me pictures of her family, and I haven't done that. I don't want to subject her to old Doug Jones. Let her see the young Doug Jones that's pictured in the book. That's probably all the farther I want to go. But anyway, she's getting to the point where she needs a little guidance as to what to do for Medicare enrollment. And her question was, when should we start to do the Medicare enrollment? And my question is, that depends on when the retirement date is, and when is the employer group plan going to come to an end? Because once we know that, then I can guide you with the Medicare enrollment and the Medicare supplement choice. Out of all the choices, that's going to be the more complicated, because we have to know when to start the coverage, when to tell the insurance companies to start your coverage. So then she said, well, I want to know everything there is to know about all of this stuff. And to throw a monkey wrench into things, they are going to move from the West Coast to a Midwestern state. And so what's it going to cost? Blah, blah, blah. Will my plan move with me when I buy a plan? So my quick answer is yes, your Medicare supplement plan will always move with you. And at least the companies I'm familiar with, your cost will not change. So if you're in a high cost state and you move to a low cost state, you're not going to get a reduction in your premium. If you move from a low cost state to a high cost state, my understanding is you're not going to get an increase in your premium. So having dealt with that, I did two things. I compared the cost of three different companies with three different plan Gs and three different high deductible plan Gs in two different states to see what they should do. Should they enroll before they move to the Midwest? Should they enroll after they move to the Midwest? Where is the savings going to be? And it looked to me as though they should enroll when they're on the West Coast before they actually make the move to the Midwest, because their premium will remain lower. For some reason, the Midwest state they've chosen to move to has higher overall Medicare supplement plans. And then the question becomes, out of all these numbers I've given her, what is the best selection process to determine what Medicare supplement I recommend for the two of them? And so I devised kind of a way of going through this mentally for the uninitiated, for the person that's kind of new to thinking about Medicare. I said, I'm going to give you all these numbers and I can discuss them with you all day long till the cows come home. But I would probably simplify the process by eliminating things. In other words, we've got a big picture, a lot of numbers. Let's eliminate the less desirable choices. So I said to her, the first thing to eliminate would be the rates for your new state. I said, they are higher than the rates for the state you live in now. So if we are able to send in applications while you are legitimate residents of your current home state, your rates may continue to be calculated from the lower cost rate tables rather than from your new state's calculations. No guarantees, but I'm sure at least one of these companies works that way. So let's throw out all the numbers that pertain to your Midwest state and continue working with the lower premiums that they charge in your West Coast state. Number two, I would eliminate the rates for Plan F. Art and Sandy are both pushing 70 years old. I think he is 70 and she's going to be 70. And so they are eligible for either Plan F or Plan G or HDF, high deductible Plan F, or high deductible Plan G. So that's a lot of numbers for them to look at. And they've always been told that Plan F is the golden standard of Medicare supplements. And it really was. That was the answer for everybody that wanted the most comprehensive coverage and that wanted that security blanket feeling with a Cadillac Medicare supplement plan. Well, somewhere along the line, Congress passed a law that said the Part B annual deductible cannot be covered by your Medicare supplement plan anymore. And so starting in 2020, people turning 65 in 2020 were not allowed to buy Plan F anymore. People older than that are still allowed to buy Plan F, but is it a good idea? Well, it's been my observation that insurance companies are jacking up the rates for Plan F, just a you know an unconscionable amount. So what they're doing is they're asking anybody who applies for Plan F now to pay three times that $200 deductible that Plan G subjects them to. Plan G looks like a pretty good deal. If you don't like the idea of that $200 deductible, get a Plan F if you're old enough, and you'll pay $600 more per year. So they're making it unviable. They're making Plan F not a viable choice. So I said to Sandy, throw out the rates for Plan F. Let's get rid of that. And then I said to Sandy, number three, throw out the rates for high deductible Plan F. They're not being increased to an unreasonable extent like regular Plan F, but it is remotely possible that this will happen in the future. Almost all the people in an average year for the additional benefit for high deductible Plan F is that credits the Part B annual deductible, which is only $200 now. Almost all of those people like the fact that that $203 is credited to their high deductible. But in reality, the insurance companies may, in fact, start jacking those rates up too. So why take the chance? So I said, throw out Plan F and throw out high deductible Plan F. And then I said, okay, here's where it gets tough. I would, of all these numbers I've given you, throw out the rates for Plan G. I said, sure, this is now the Cadillac of Medicare supplement plans and will pay all of your medical treatments that Medicare considers necessary. That means anything Medicare has a procedural code for, except for the Part B annual deductible, which is only $203 this year. It goes up a little bit every year. However, I do not advise most people with average or better health to take this plan because it's a waste of money to buy more insurance than you actually need. You might be better off buying the much more cost-effective, high deductible, or as Randy and I call it, high value Plan G. That would save you a bunch of money and you could either sock it away. And I've joked about people putting it in their mattress, under their mattress or in their underwear drawer. But you could also use it to buy a dental, vision, and hearing plan if you wanted to. That leaves, after we've thrown all that other stuff away in the decision process, that leaves only Plan HDG, which is high deductible or high value Plan G, as an alternative. But often people are scared away by the deductible. Now, this year, that deductible is $2,340. And it sounds, when you say the word deductible, it sounds like you're going to have to pay that before you get any of your medical bills covered. But that's not true at all. In reality, this deductible is never paid by the insured in the event of unusually large medical bills in a given year. The accurate way to measure your out-of-pocket risk is to subtract your premium savings from the deductible. As an example, let's look at the unisex rates from Plan G and high deductible G in your current state. Out of the ones, the companies I've showed you, the most attractive monthly Plan G rate is $184. the most attractive monthly high value rate or high deductible plan G rate is $44 from my favorite company. The difference is $140 per month. Now, if you multiply that savings, you're saving $140 per person in your family by month. If you multiply that 140 times 12, you will have saved $1,680 in a year. If you have an unusual accident or illness, and let's say you have $12,000 or more in medical bills, you would pay the deductible of $2,340 that's so scary, but you would still have $1,680 that you will have saved. Your extra risk is $660 out of your pocket. That's the worst case scenario. With this plan, with a high deductible plan, you would save $1,680 in this year and a similar amount in future years until you had the bad luck to use all of your deductible, in which case your amount at risk would be $50 a month, basically. That's the amount you're rolling the dice on. It is a no-brainer to take the high deductible plan G. I said this $660 is the extra cost you risk by taking the plan that will save you $140 per month, year after year after year. Now, remember, these two are, Sandy and Art are the same age. So if they each take that high value, high deductible plan G, and one of them has a rough year, then as a couple, they will actually save money because together they're saving $3,360 a year. If one of them meets that $2,340 deductible, as a couple, they still would have saved over $1,000. So after doing those calculations, it makes no sense for them to think about spending more money than they have to get the richer plan G that pays for everything. So number five in my analysis for Sandy, I said rates for the high deductible from a couple of different companies are almost always the lowest offering this plan. They pay very small commissions. The company that I say is my favorite is a company that pays very small commissions, and they don't increase those commissions through the years as the rates go up. In other words, there's going to be an incremental increase that stops at age 80 for my favorite company, the one I recommend to all my clients, but the commission doesn't go up. So the increments of increase in the premium cost for the clients is very small. They also offer an opportunity to switch to full plan G at the two-year mark without asking any health questions. But frankly, I say that most people are not going to be interested in that once they've had 2 years under their belt of cost savings. So that was the short version of what I told my clients when they're trying to pick out the plan that they are going to pick for a Medicare supplement. And frankly, I did all this because I know that Sandy is risk averse, and I know that she has to have the pictures drawn on the wall to show that in actuality, if they both take the high deductible plan, they're both going to be better off. And that risk aversion is misplaced in this case, because I think they're getting a good solid deal if they go with the high deductible, high value plan G. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, Randy.
Well, that's a great story. Randy. Anything that takes me the other way, away from Medicare Advantage plans, I'm happy.
Well, when you hear high deductible, you think, oh, God, I'm going to have to pay 100% of my medical bills until I meet that $2,300 deductible. That sucks, but it's not true at all. In this case, they're going to pay such a small amount that it's crazy for them not to accept the savings of the high deductible plan.
Well, it's the world's poorest name for a product that is clearly the best choice in a lot of cases.
The beautiful thing is that many of my more recent clients over the last, I'd say, 6 months have used high value when they talk to me. I want to consider the high value plan. How much would the high value cost in my area, my home state? That means that you and I are making some inroads here into the way that people are thinking about Medicare. I think we're making some progress, Randy.
Yeah, well, you know, all you have to do is, you know, sit down with a pencil and you can figure out with just a little bit of ciphering, as we used to say back in the Midwest, that it's the best choice.
Yep. You sharpen the pencil with your knife, your pocket knife, and then you lick it, and then you go to work on ciphering. But you got to write around the big chunks of wood in the piece of paper you're using, though.
Well, that, you know, the chief tablets, you know, you could actually, you could actually see the chunks of wood in it.
I know. I had those all the way up till sixth grade. But you're right. It doesn't take much ciphering, but I think it takes repetition. And I'm not going to give up the fight, because I believe that when people are clearly understanding the really, really big savings that they can have with the high value, high deductible Plan G, that we're going to have more and more converts to that way of thinking.
I hope so, because I hate, you know, as you've said many times in the past, there's no reason at all to spend, buy more insurance than you need.
I also say there's no replacement for displacement, which means that I got to get out in the garage and work on some of my hot rods.
You wouldn't believe the trouble I'm talking to the folks on the podcast here now. You wouldn't believe the trouble I have getting Doug in here out of his garage, working on his, what are we working on today? Your Jeepster?
Got to finish up the Jeepster, putting a new fuel pump in that thing. I stopped trying to make the old one work and make it fit properly. I just hauled off and bought a new one, which arrived. So that's the next project, is getting rid of the fuel pump that doesn't work and putting a new one on.
Well, I'm glad to hear that as soon as you get this thing running, you can be to the grocery store in less than 6 seconds.
Yeah, but guess what? Don't want to drive it in the snow. So,
oh no!
By the time I get it running, it'll be time to put it away for the wintertime.
Oh, I hate that. But you're going to be out here by that point anyway, but the Jeepster won't.
No, the Jeepster will stay in Illinois until we're moved out permanently. And I don't know when or if that's ever going to happen.
Well, so. I'm hoping it'll be sooner rather than later, but who knows?
Me too. Me too.
We are out of time, Doug.
I figured that, but we have another episode coming up sooner or later.
We do. So yeah.
Count on that.
I want to thank the audience for joining us, as always. Without them, it's no fun at all. It's just Doug sitting and I, you know, sitting here staring at each other going, what should we talk about now?
How about Medicare? No!
No! Oh, no! No, no. No, let's not talk about that. And then I eventually twist his arm metaphorically and say, okay, Doug, we got to talk some Medicare here.
Yeah, well, that's over for today, but perhaps on another day, we'll resume the conversation.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you all for joining us. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and the guy that loves wrenching on classic cars.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye-bye.